seated. On the one hand, I'm not sure that there's anything so farther from our understanding as to speak of a king. That's on the one hand. But on the other hand, I think we know what that would look like. If you've been paying attention to the papers and the goings-on of the presidential search for the University of Iowa, you may have caught some gist of what it feels like. You know, there's been some comments about maybe Mr. Rastetter is wielding a little too much power in the selection process. Maybe some of it was done without input from the people. Hey, we're a democracy. We like to all have our input and have it heard and made a difference. So maybe we do know a little bit about what it looks like and feels like. We have the some of the University of Iowa community saying, come out and talk to us. Well, in our story today, Pilate, in fact, did come out and talk to the Jews, and he didn't even have to, because Pilate was Pilate. He had the power, he had the authority, or at least he thought so. And so we have this going and back. If you read John, you'll find out that they go back and forth about seven times between the Jewish leaders and the Roman authorities, and they're kind of playing this game of chess to see who's going to finally make the call, and it's kind of funny in a way because both of them expose the limits of their authority, and Jesus helps that happen, I might add. So anyway, the Jewish authorities can't go into Pilate's headquarters because then they'll be unclean, and after all, this is during the Passover, and they don't want to miss any of the good food. You can understand that. So they don't go into Pilate's headquarters, but he comes out to them, and here's their little scheming. And so, but he comes out, and he says, "What accusation do you bring against this man?" Now, and this is just before the reading where Kathy started today. And they just say, well, if he wasn't a criminal, we wouldn't have brought him to you. So they don't really say, these are the charges against this guy. They don't answer. So Pilate might have been powerful, but he discovers his limits as he goes back and forth with them. And he said, well, you take him and do as you wish. But they then say, well, no, you know, we have limits because the Romans are the ultimate authority over all the countries and people that they have conquered and over which they have ruling authority. And so they are the ones that get to put people to death because that, after all, is the ultimate power. And so they say, the Jewish religious authorities say, no, we can't put him to death. You said we can't, okay? Even though Leviticus does have some guidelines for when it's appropriate, for example, to stone your children to death and that sort of thing. But that'll be another sermon some other day. So now Pilate throws up his hands and goes in. Now they don't care if, and it's interesting, Jesus doesn't care either if he's unclean, defiled, religiously impure. But Pilate goes into his quarters and says, bring that Jesus in here. So Jesus goes into Pilate's quarters. So he's no longer fit to eat the Passover anyway, although we have the record that they've already done the Passover meal with his disciples. But he calls Jesus into his quarters, and there they have another exchange. Now, and we can assume that Pilate's guards brought him in, not the religious authorities who want to stay clean. But actually, in this volley of power and authority, Jesus actually mocks Pilate in a sort of way. And I don't know if it's appropriate to say Jesus was sarcastic. It sounds kind of nasty. I don't even know if it's okay to say that as Jesus says this, I imagine he might be smirking. I mean, he knows what's coming down the pike here. But he might have been smirking when he said, when after Pilate asked, are you the king of the Jews? And then Jesus responds, gee, did you come up with that question all by yourself? Isn't that kind of a sassy answer? If your kids said that to you, parents, I don't know how you would receive that. You might think, this one has a little bit of an attitude today. And that's what Jesus said. Gee, did you come up with that all by yourself, you little boy here? And so anyway, so Jesus is switching authority. There are people with human power, but it's pretty obvious that Jesus has the authority. He's not even worried about being impure, defiled, and all that stuff that the religious leaders have put around the fencing of God's mercy and power and grace. It's kind of ironic that in the midst of this story, humans continue to lift up worldly powers. Because it's so obvious that Jesus went way beyond all of that. Humans want to trust the power of guns or the power of bombs or even the power of fear. We seek positions of power and prestige while Jesus stands there calmly and while Jesus stands in front of us. Last week, Senator Dvorsky and Representative Kaufman held a legislative forum where they talked about possible issues to come before the 2016 Iowa legislature. When addressing some of the recent decisions and actions of Governor Branstad, some of their comments, and Kaufman's even more than Dvorsky's, because I suppose Kaufman felt a little bit licensed to be upfront and bold, but they reminded me of how far the kingdom of American government, how far from kingdom American government is. Kaufman was quite emotional, actually, when he describing how dictatorial some of our governor's actions have been, actions and decisions. It was kind of surprising to me. In this country, that's not popular. You see, it's against our culture to think that there's a king, that there's one, there's a ruling individual or family with unlimited power and absolute authority. It's seldom viewed as a good thing in whatever settings, whether it's locally, nationally, even in the state. We seldom see that as something to embrace and to encourage. Even in a government, on a campus, in a community, we seldom see that centralization as a good thing. We do know, probably across the board, we have heard that statement that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. That's a pretty popular thing. It's common in even the earliest civics classes in school. Americans are for individualism, personal freedom. And so to say Jesus Christ is king might grate against our wishes. Certainly against what our culture says is good and healthy. It's difficult for us then, as Christians, to acknowledge Jesus as king of our lives. Think about some of the advertisements, and I have not watched enough television and such to get some of the current ones, but here's just some that I could pull off from days of old, most of them. Like Toyota says, I love what you do for me. Now that's American. I love what you do for me. Now that's against kingship. That has nothing to say about king, because kings don't do it for you. They do it for them. Or the army says, be all that you can be. Or McDonald's, who deserves a break today? You do. You deserve a break today. Or even L'Oreal. You're worth it. Or Cadillac, dare greatly. And then the whole thing is only those who dare greatly will move the world forward, will drive the world forward. See, and we want that. We want to be the drivers. We want to be the movers. We want it to be for us. To assent to Christ as king is opposed to that. It's going the other direction. Throughout the scriptures, Hebrew as well as the Christian Testament, the qualities of humility, obedience, and community are so important. So here we are in a societal context of individual rights and autonomy, where I'll do what I want to do, thank you. Societal rights, where those individual rights are so important. We're fighting for the personal entitlements. Each one of us, in some way, want it for ourselves. Whether it's lower taxes for me, or less payments to you. All of those are a way of saying we want our personal entitlements. And so here we are professing Christ as the ultimate benevolent dictator. It's kind of crazy, isn't it? And then we discover that the more we place ourselves on the throne, the less room there is for Jesus to sit beside us. But if Jesus is king, not of this world, but of our hearts, everything changes. Our faith ceases to be simply personal and a private matter. We no longer call the shots. Or, as I have been saying in various contexts since we were in the Forward of Faith campaign years ago, God is working in the world and we get to help. That's what it means to have Christ as king. God's doing it. We get to help. We are the serfs. We are the underlings. And God calls the shots. That's what it means to proclaim Jesus as king. This is actually the final message, and some of you might recognize it, and some of you will say, I didn't know that the past messages have had anything to do with a disciple's path. This is the final message that is coming off of some of the themes from A Disciple's Path, the material that 6 of our 7 gigs are currently using. This one is on servanthood and serving where our gifts are strong, that 5th chapter of the 6th. In the companion reader, there's some lines about what happens when we allow Christ to be king. Now, I don't think it says it that way, but that's how I read it. And it says it this way, the church, and this is, of course, the church of Jesus Christ. The church is more than another helping agency in the community. If Christ is king, the church is more than just another helping agency in the community. If Christ is king, the church is more than a body of like-minded people doing good things in this world by the combination of their human interests and talents. If Christ is king, the church is intended by God to be nothing less than the tangible expression of God's rule and reign in this world. That's the closest we come to a statement that says Christ is king. But there it is. And if Christ is king, the church is a divinely formed community of disciples. Divinely formed community of disciples. You might have thought that you're just here because this is where you want to be. But I believe that there's some urge of Christ deep within us wanting more than there is currently, that more than we're currently experiencing in life. It is that thirst, that hunger, the same thirst that the woman of Samaria was experiencing, the same hunger that Jesus experienced in the wilderness, that same thirst and hunger is driving us to more. And that call, that we are called into being by the Spirit of God and energized by that Spirit. That is what it means if Christ is king of our lives individually and of our world corporately. There's a story, it's a fictional story, but there's a story about Jesus walking down the rocky paths of Israel with his 12 disciples. And he invited his disciples to pick up a stone and carry it with them. And so they picked up their stones. Now John, he picked up a good-sized one. He was soon sweating. But Peter is nobody's fool. He picked up a hand-sized rock and was cruising along, kind of snickering that John had so much rock to carry, wondering, why did he do that? They got to the top of a hilltop. There was a nice panoramic view, and Jesus said, sit down. So they sat down for a rest, and Jesus commanded all their stones to turn into bread. Peter was the first one done eating. And he asked if John would have a little bit to spare. Sometime later, Jesus was walking down one of the stony paths in Israel, and he invited people to pick up a stone. Peter is a fast learner. He picked up this rock, and he was carrying that big old thing down the path. He was going to have plenty this time. And they got to a wadi. We would call it a river or a dry river stream or a gully because it's all rock and hills. And so the water, it rains, it washes down, then there's no river, there's no source up there. Anyway, they came to a wadi and Jesus said, throw your stone in. Peter said, wait a minute. Throw it in. But, Lord, last time you turned it into bread and we could eat it. And Jesus' comment says a lot about who's king. He said, for whom were you carrying the stone? If Jesus is king, we do not carry the stone. We do not live our life for our own benefit and pleasure. We carry it. We live it. We extend it for the benefit of all creation. However, we're able to do that, each one of us gifted differently. Not a one of us is going to be able to do it the same. Each one of us needs the encouragement of others to extend our gifts, to use them however we're able. We live it for Christ and for His glory. And if we do, the kingdom will benefit, and all the king's subjects will have life abundantly. Amen.